Okay. So we are starting our breakthrough questioning module today. But before we do, first of all, just welcome back. I know we had a couple weeks off of live calls, and I hope that you all had a nice break. Whether it was just a break from me or you actually like had a break from work for spring break, but I hope it's been a nice couple of weeks for you. I hope that you've had a chance to take a look at and maybe listen to some of the just extra recordings that I provided over the last few weeks. If you haven't, please do. There's lots for you in the member center. Couple of housekeeping pieces just to share. So first of all, we updated in your member center. You've got tracking in the certification tab in the member center. You've got tracking sheets both for your partner calls in the program, and then for the coaching that on top of that, you've got 18 hours, 18 sessions of coaching calls on top of that. And we updated the tracking sheet in there. I just wanted to let you know in case you already have it downloaded, you might want to go again. I added just some extra questions for reflection. This is not to give you more busy work. This is just to extract as much learning as possible from each of those sessions that you do. The questions that we added are the same exact questions that I've shared before that are just great to ask yourself after any client session. Essentially, it's what went really well in this session. What would I like to do differently next time? And what is my inner wisdom telling me about this client or what this client needs next? And it's a quick way to really just build your muscles, tune into your intuition, all of that. The other housekeeping piece that I wanted to make sure that I mention is that hopefully I will be with some of you again tomorrow. So tomorrow afternoon, we've got a 2-hour session. I call it's a bonus call for new and tentative practitioners. So I just want to explain that because it's not just for you if you're new to the work. It's what we're going to do. We'll see what we're going to do. And that call, it tends to be intimate. And so I keep it a little bit loose to kind of see what everybody needs. But essentially what we're going to do is a little bit of a process and also have an exploration and a discussion around some of your fears around either doing the work or going deeper or using the tools that we're looking at, the things that are standing in your way. And then we'll kind of see from there. We may have time for some model coaching. I may ask one of you to do some coaching and we'll break it down. And we'll do some other pieces around it too. It's always a beloved session. So I hope to see a lot of you there. We'll have a lot of fun and kind of just like real deep, nourishing conversation about some of our fears and hesitancies around the work. Let's see, Jen is asking, yes, it will be recorded, so you'll have it in your member center if you can't be there live. If you are live, it's highly interactive, so you can't hide. I'll be calling on you. All right. We are stepping in to our breakthrough questioning module. We've got three sessions in this module, although really all of our modules from here on out are going to have questioning skill, different types of questioning skills in them, different types of creating awareness skills, all of that. But we've got three specifically dedicated to questioning. On today's session, we're going to look at foundational principles for breakthrough questions and elements of powerful breakthrough questions. next week's class, we're going to look at different types of questions that you can use and some different question sequences, when and why to use different types of questions. And then in our third class for this module, we'll have a questioning practicum. So that's how the setup will be. Okay. So why are questioning skills so important to effective coaching? I know it's obvious, but we'll go through them because it's also important. You know, the obvious is also sometimes important to look at. So at the heart of masterful coaching is masterful questioning. This is just my personal opinion, and you can check it out for yourself, but I really don't believe that you can have one without the other. We don't just want to tell. The most masterful coaching questions have the ability to do the following. So they have the ability to create awareness. It's a main creating awareness tool. Masterful questions have the ability to support a client to access their own intuition, which is what we want to be doing, their own inner wisdom, we can also call it. Really good coaching questions have the ability to promote creativity, brainstorming, and problem solving. And that's important too, because we don't want to just be feeding the answers, right? The brainstorms, the answers to the problems. We want to support our clients to have agency to find the right answers for them inside of themselves and feel empowered around it. Questions do that. I just said this, but I'll say it again. Really good questions empower clients to take responsibility for themselves. They create integrity and commitment. Good questions help our clients articulate their judgment for themselves. They can create breakthroughs and new habits. Questions activate learning. So if any of you have heard of the Talmudic style of learning, which is a Jewish tradition of learning, it's all questions. It's just one question leads to the next question, which leads to the next question, and finding those answers for yourself. And a really good question can also support a client to create connection to themselves, which is another part of what we want to do and support our clients with, is to connect deeply with themselves. So one guiding principle that is at the heart of any client relationship, or at the heart of even any client session, is this: people are curious. People are curious. Now, we looked at in our listening module how sometimes history can kind of pile on top of that innate curiosity, but people, their essential selves, they are curious, and curiosity leads to learning. Curiosity leads to learning. I know that's so simple and so obvious, but it's also just such an important principle for us to remember as practitioners and for our clients to remember. Sharon, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to, when you said helps them articulate judgment, are you talking about discernment judgment?
Yeah, thanks for clarifying. Yeah, so what their, I don't mean like how they're judging others,
that's
but
what
their
I figured.
Opinions, their thoughts, their discernment. Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. Okay, so what I'm about to say next, some of you have heard me say before, and it's important to say more than once for us to look at, in today's coaching and transformational industry, way too many practitioners consult when what's required is coaching. Now, like we looked at in our last module, consulting is part of coaching, right? And questioning, when what's required is questioning. Now, not that there's anything wrong with consulting, and for a lot of us, myself included, consulting is a big part of the service that I provide. We have an expertise and wisdom, experience, knowledge, and our clients want that from us. They want our opinions on things. Again, that's one way of creating awareness. But that being said, a big mistake that practitioners make is that they default to consulting more than is actually helpful or supportive for the client. And when they do that, when they default to consulting, to just telling, to just sharing, then the practitioner misses out on opportunities to ask questions that will actually create much more positive energy, much more motivation, much more excitement, and quite honestly, much better ideas than if we were to just simply share our expertise. In situations that require questioning, when we default to consulting, then our clients miss out on the opportunity to answer a question. And it might be the simplest question ever, but that answer can make the biggest difference for them. There's a lot of practitioners out there that call themselves coaches that are actually consultants. And again, nothing wrong with consulting, but we want to be clear on it. So learning for sure happens when we consult. But that being said, there are many more moments where learning is more optimal or more leveraged when it comes through self-discovery, self-inquiry, self-proclamation, i.e. answering questions for oneself. So all that being said, why do practitioners end up consulting when it's actually a moment for questioning? And by the way, I fall into this sometimes too, right? Like no perfection here whatsoever. So there are a couple of reasons why this happens, even when we know, right? Even when we know. So one reason might be discomfort with the learning process or fear that the learning process is going to take too long, right? So back to energetics, right? If as the practitioner, I'm scared that we're going to run out of time before the end of the session, or the client isn't really going to get the learning, or the client isn't going to get it right, or, you know, there's something faulty with them, or there's something faulty with me, I may jump into consulting when actually questioning is what's required. Sometimes if we as the practitioner need to sound smart or impress, we will end up consulting instead of questioning. If we have a tendency to take over responsibility for others, it goes back to the playing field, our very first call. If we are an over responsibility-er, or another way of saying that, if we are a hero-er, if we're really good at heroing other people, we may use consulting as a crutch instead of questioning. And then related to that, if we don't trust that the client always knows best, if we don't trust that our client always knows what's best for them, we may have a tendency to consult when questioning is what's needed. If we've gotten just a little bit too comfortable with our own wisdom, we may consult more than question. And then when we're in the habit of that, we might just forget to question. All right, so take a moment and think about this. Are there moments where you might be taking shortcuts and just feeding clients answers instead of providing them with the type of learning opportunity that a question can provide? There are moments where you're taking those shortcuts. And if so, why? Maybe it's one of the reasons that I mentioned, or more than one of the reasons I mentioned. If you're not working with clients right now, you can also relate this to your personal relationships and conversation. I do this a lot in my personal relationships and conversations. Big place I try to practice this is with my kids, right? Tell more, tell less, ask more, right? So you can look at those personal relationships as well. Even in your relationship with yourself, right? Your conversations with yourself. Are there times where you're telling yourself something when really a question would be much more helpful? All right, let's pause here for a moment. What's coming through so far? I'd love to hear some of your voices. What are you seeing? What's clicking for you? And consulting versus coaching. Linda.
Yeah, so this is a good one. So I definitely consult more, and I'm so delighted because recently I've had the experience of it, of the somebody consulting me, and I realized that the space that it doesn't provide for me to figure it out. And so I was going, oh gosh, so this is what it feels like. So what my driving force is to maximize the value for the session. And so your first comment about things, you know, maybe not going as fast, you're worried that you won't get some, you know, something won't happen. It's the biggest driver is to produce value, and at least my definition of value, you know, the answer or something for them to go. So that they can get, you know, make it to the next week and with something, you know, to mull over. So, and then the other thing is, I do have an over responsibility thing going on. I think I have some rescuing tendencies in the past, but so I do feel when I commit and you take me on as a coach, it's my responsibility to make sure that you get. You know, that you get what you want. You know what I mean? I have that narrative. So those are the two things that drive me, but I'm so happy that I've been on the receiving end of the consulting, too much consulting. Yeah. So I'm super excited about this module because I just want to have like pages of questions and like live in those. And oh, and one last thing, Joanna, is that I have been practicing asking questions of my wife more rather than just doing it. And it's been so good, you know, and I catch myself wanting to say, do this and this. I said, well, what do you think is it? You know, yeah, to prompting. And it's been really cool. So I can't wait to get really good at this.
I love that. I love that you're doing it with your wife. That's amazing. I wish I could do that more with my husband.
Well, I don't have kids, so, you know.
Well, so much richness in everything that you said. And one, I'm not going to ask this as a question because of time. I'll just kind of toss it for you to think about. I wonder if there's a connection between the needing to provide value and the over-responsibility. There may be a link there for you as well.
Okay, one more time. The needing to provide value and... Yeah.
And the being the over responsibility or so what I'll ask it as a question, what is the connection between those two? I'll let you think about that.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you. Julia, did you have your hand raised? I feel like I saw it up there.
Yes, it was up there. Thank you. What I realized is that I'm becoming more of a coach, and I'm really excited about this because when I first started, I had this almost condescending views of coaches. I'm like, what do I need you to ask me questions for? That's not why I'm hiring you. I want you to tell me what to do and I'll go out and do it. And I realized that's pretty much how I ran my life. And that wasn't working. And that the questions, it's almost like they do their own work. It's like that pressure is off of me to accomplish for them. The pressure is off of myself, even when I'm struggling. It's really good. I'm really happy.
I'm so glad that that shift is happening. That's awesome. And I can just see from the expression on your face and your energy, you know, how it feels, how that shift feels. So happy to hear it. Yay. Elijah.
Yes, thank you. I too am super excited about this next group of modules. I don't know, this module. So I've been coaching since 2011 and I have a lot of training and I feel like I'm a good coach. And this is the question that I talk about with my colleagues the most of like, what's the question I could have asked? Like when we're going over client sessions, if we felt like I left that session, maybe I just didn't feel like I did what I wanted to do or I, you know, and so, you know, and that's a whole other conversation about like every session is fine and perfect. And, but I like exploring or and like kind of deconstructing and talking with colleagues about like, what would you have asked or what's a good question? And so I feel, and I have a little bit of a story that like, I never know the good questions. It's not true. I know I asked some great questions, but it's also true that I have a lot to learn here. And so I'm just like super excited about this. So the thing that stops me often, I feel, from asking the great questions is I have a story of, I don't know what to ask. I don't know what the question is. What's the question here that's going to create the breakthrough? Yeah. And then I'm like, then I can have my own little mini spiral of like, well, I really suck as a coach and why, you know, whatever. I mean, it doesn't last long, but I can go there.
Right. So. I'm so glad that you're bringing it up because I know that you're not the only one. So glad you're calling it a story. Right.
Yeah.
So much wisdom in what you just shared. And I do want to like just pull out one more piece so important, which is that every session, you know, there's no such thing as perfection and every session is perfect, right? And it can be valuable. And you'll see, like, I'll suggest to go back and look what are different ways to have asked the question and this and that to build the muscle. But the two can live together, right? That was a great session. And here are places for improvement. Yeah. Thank you. Maya.
Hi. I have more of a question, I suppose. It's a share, but it's a question. So I kind of think of myself as somebody who leads with the questions, who teaches with the questions. I'm a provocateur, if you would, in the teaching realm, which is more upsetting when I find myself, I catch myself in the moment when I'm impatient and I jump right into giving answers. So the question is, what do you do in the moment if that happens?
Great question. I'm going to ask it back to you first.
Well, I guess track back and ask questions. It's the impatience. It's yes, wanting to provide value, but also just going like, we need to get to the answers quickly. And I already know it. I'm just going to give it to you.
Right. Yeah. So that's it. Exactly. Right. And so what that requires is slowing down in those moments and first just noticing yourself. And this can be done, by the way, with practice. This doesn't have to take a lot of time. This can be done in a few moments, mm-hmm. but noticing yourself, right. And your body and exactly what you just said. I'm really impatient in this moment. There's a difference between feeling impatient and then noticing. Right? Naming for yourself that you're feeling that, right? No, no. And that's why I'm jumping, right? And then you just slow that down and ask the question. And by the way, or not, or just tell it, right? Because that, like, I don't want us to get so like, I have to do it this way and I can't ever tell it. There are moments for telling it, right? That's why we did all those, what we looked at with creating awareness, right? I said, we're going to save questioning, but I gave so many other ways, right? So number one, there are moments, back to what Elijah said, you're not going to mess it up. If you give the answer versus asking the question, that doesn't mean the whole thing is ruined at all, right? And you can also backtrack. All the things. I don't want us to apply any myth of perfection or rigidity to any of this. These are like just foundational principles to keep in mind for, you know, about good practices, but there's always exceptions to the rule. And that's an important, I'm like pausing on this because it's so important for all of us, right? Which leads me, I'm sorry, I'm going to go on a tangent for 1 second. It's important. Thank you, Maya, for bringing this up. Inbal had shared with me, for those of you that are in the cohorts, that a session or two back, something came up around some fear that you're not doing it the way that I'm doing it. Don't do it the way that I do it. You're not supposed to. It's not going to be you. It's not going to be as effective. It's not going to be as good for your clients. My intention with everything that we're learning is to teach you foundational principles and ideas, you know, and ways of thinking about things and self-exploration. But I want you to, first of all, question all of it, but also know then you don't have to go and do it my way. You shouldn't do it my way. Be you. Do it your way. Those are the best results are going to come from that. Thank you. Rose.
Yes. So this module, Powerful Questioning, I've been, you know, I'm excited. I have a little bit of, you know, anticipation and I guess because I have some doubt and it's in myself, but I'm so aware that this is about trust and it's about first trusting myself, trusting the process in general and trusting my client. Yes. And what you said, that first one, the discomfort with the learning part, the whole process. I had a client call me yesterday for an emergency extra coaching session, which we had, and she was in deep in her story and her pain and wanted answers and didn't know. And I asked, but I found myself not being sure and not sure of where it all could go and not trusting the process. I just witnessed myself. So I did move into more wisdom and consulting than I think would have served her. And so anyway, I just have, it's a place that I guess I get to show up in and know and practice and be humble, be vulnerable and all those things.
100%. And just by, I love everything you just said. And just by seeing what you're seeing right now, it's going to help, right? Just, you'll be more aware.
Because I didn't know what to do, but then I'm not supposed to. That's not my place to know what to do.
That's right.
To invite and ask and encourage. And so, yeah. Okay. Well, good stuff. I'm ready.
Good. And it's such wisdom, right? It's not our job to know what to do. That will knock us off track 100%. Good. As an aside, you know, sometimes I'll ask a question and I'll say to the client, I'm not sure if this is the right question to ask, or help me formulate this question. You know, this is what I'm thinking, but what is the right question here? We don't have to get it right every time. Thank you. All right, I'll take one more share. Catherine.
Definitely, you know, everything that everyone has shared, I completely relate to. And one of the things that amazes me about consulting versus questions is I noticed that I if I'm getting into consulting as a reaction because I'm feeling responsible, I want to provide enough value, or I'm nervous, then the whole emphasis is on me and I become exhausted by the session. Whereas when I ask questions, it becomes about them and I'm really enlivened by the session. That paradox just fascinates me. And it's been an aha through this whole process because I had actually stopped coaching because I'm like, I don't know, I find coaching exhausting. I don't know if I like people enough. Like it went there, like I'm just not cut out for this. And I'm like, questions are so powerful because half of a powerful question opens up this whole world and a whole shift potentially. So I kind of love that paradox. So just for me, remembering it's not about me, it's about them.
Yeah, so beautifully said. Yes. And I'm so glad that shift has happened for you. Okay. All right. So all that being said and looked at, I want to spend the rest of our time today looking at elements of powerful breakthrough questions. What are the elements of powerful breakthrough questions? What makes a really good breakthrough question, essentially? So there are some things that we want to keep in mind. So number one, this is important. There's no formula for amazing questions. I really wish I could give you a formula. You know, we all want it, but there isn't one. And that's because masterful questioning is an art. As is masterful coaching, you know, like that's why I'm not teaching you a method, right? Do this and then this and then this and then this. It's an art. So, you know, there's so many different client situations, so many different scenarios, so many different client moods, client energies, client backgrounds. And you want to take all of that into consideration when you go to ask a question. You know, that's back to coaching the what based on the who. So it's kind of BS to say, I'm going to give you an A plus B plus C, and then you're going to have, you know, you're going to know how to do powerful questions. But what I can give you is, again, the elements of powerful questions for you to be considering. And then next week, we'll look at lots of different types of questions. The other thing to say, we already know this, but just to say it again, no skill, no coaching skill exists in a vacuum, right? So the most masterful practitioners are working their many skills at the same time. In other words, it's hard to ask a masterful question if you haven't been doing masterful listening and you haven't activated your curiosity through that masterful listening, or you haven't checked your filters. It's hard also to ask a masterful question if you haven't paid attention to the energetics of the coaching relationship, equalize the playing field. The best questions are when everything is building on each other and everything is working together. Okay, so one foundational principle, don't expect any kind of particular answer or outcome. The moment that you expect a client to answer in a particular way, or the moment you become attached to them answering in a particular way, it kills curiosity. And it really then can stop you in your tracks, right? If you were expecting, if you were attached to a certain answer and that's not the answer that you got, it can really throw you off your game, right? So you never want to have any kind of expectation of how a client is going to answer a question. And by the way, everything that we are looking at around questioning applies to sessions with clients, but it also applies to enrollment conversations. So in an enrollment conversation, you know, when you ask a client, you know, what are the results that they're looking for, or what's standing in their way, or, you know, whatever it is, the moment that you get attached to an outcome on a particular answer is the moment that you're going to get stopped in your tracks and not know where to go next. So if you are not expecting an answer, then what do you put in its place? So instead of expectation, follow your intuition and your natural curiosity. When your curiosity, it's like if there's an expectation of an answer, the curiosity isn't there. It's the two really, it's hard for them to exist together, right? When you've put your intuition first and your natural curiosity, that's when you have the best chance of asking the next best question and the next best question and the next best question. And if you're hearing me say this and you're like, oh my God, that feels really hard, too hard to think about. What am I curious about? What is my intuition telling me? I just want you to know, you just practice it a little bit and you're not going to have to think too hard about it. It just comes up naturally, because back to what I was saying before, foundational principle, we are human beings are naturally curious. We have that inherently inside of us. So a couple pieces about the curiosity and intuition. I don't mean a really, really wide open, open-ended intuition and curiosity that's going to take you in different directions that are not in line with what the client wants to receive by the end of the session or through all of the work that you're doing together, right? So you do always want to keep the end goal of the session or of the 6-month cycle of the work together. You do want to keep that in mind so that you don't just like end up asking random questions that you're naturally curious about. I like to think of it this way. A good question is rooted in 4 things. So number 1, listening to your client and being attuned to their needs. Number 2, keeping track of the bigger picture agenda. Number 3, your own intuition and curiosity. And then number 4, also rooted in what you know about human behavior, which is why we look at so many human behavior pieces in this program. So when a question is rooted in those 4 things, it's got a really good chance of being a really good question. All right, another foundational principle to think about. Remember that your client always has a choice. Before you ask a question, remember that your client always has a choice. Okay, so this is another one of those things that I know is obvious, but it's so easy to forget, right? And we can get carried away in our own limiting thinking on this, or our client go with our client's limiting thinking on this. So let me give you some examples of what I mean by this. So let's say a client says, you know, my kids are complete chaotic messes. It doesn't matter what I do, they just won't clean up. They just won't clean up. So in this situation, the client is coming from a place of not having a choice, right? They're a mess. It doesn't matter what I do, they won't clean up. But if we are always operating on the principle that a client always has a choice, then we can get curious, right? And maybe even first we ask ourselves, what does what does this client actually have a choice about, right? And then we can ask a question around that. Maybe the choice is around how she feels about this, right? Maybe it is true. The kids are never going to clean up. Sometimes I feel that way, right? But so what are her other choices around this situation? What are ways that she can respond versus react? What questions can you as the practitioner ask that's from a philosophy of choice, right? That we always have choice. So when this comes up, first thing is, again, don't go into consulting mode, right? Or at least not right away. You might be a parenting coach and have a great trick for the kids to clean up, but that can come later, right, in consulting. But don't go into consulting mode. Don't be attached to outcome. And what I mean by that is to getting her to a solution, right? There may not be a way for her kids to clean up. There may not be a way. Or if there is a way, the solution may not reflect her values or the energy that she wants to put in. So instead, when you've got a client that says something and they're not coming from a philosophy of choice, here are some other things you can do. First of all, ask, what would you like to receive around this issue? So this is similar to intention setting, and it's really important. A client may just want to be seen in their frustration. I'm getting a little bit off topic of cues here, but this is a cue, right? Like, what would you like to receive around this issue, right? So sometimes it's just about being seen in the frustration, not solving the problem. Or maybe what the client will answer to that question, what would you like to receive around this issue? She says, I want to be told that it's normal, that this is the way six-year-old kids act. Or she may want a solution to it. Or she may want a way to handle the whole situation so that she doesn't resent her kids, et cetera, right? So even just asking this question, what would you like to receive around this issue, can lead to a breakthrough or a revelation, because it will open up choices for the client on how they want to move forward. That makes sense? Another question that you could ask in a situation where a client is not coming from a place of choice is, what's the growth opportunity for you here? That could open up some choices for them. Or where do you have a choice in this situation? Where do you have choice in this situation? Or even, I don't like to ask yes or no questions too often, but you could ask a yes or no. Is it true 100% of the time that no matter what you do, they won't clean up? I think it's so easy in today's world and just for us to go to a place where we feel like we don't have choices in situations when actually there are. So we can only have or approach our questions and our clients with a philosophy of choice if we also practice it for ourselves. So on a scale of 1 to 10, just note for yourself, how good are you remembering that you have choice in your life? And just so you know, I'm not very good at it. I have to be on top of myself with it. Next question to think about, how does this issue show up or impact your life? This having choice or not approaching your life with choice, how does that show up or impact your life? Here's another thing to think about. What's one specific place or situation in your life right now that could really benefit with a more of an approach of a choice philosophy? What's one specific place in your life right now that could really benefit from you approaching it with more of a choice philosophy? All right, let's pause here. I'd love to hear one or two shares. What's coming up for you around this idea of a philosophy of choice? What feels important here? What are you seeing? Julia.
Wow, thank you. What's coming up for me is with work, there is no choice. It's either you succeed or you fail. So if you're not succeeding, it's not for you. Quit, go do something else. It's either you're working in your passion or you're working just making money. Very polarizing, this or that or the other. Nothing, like, it's exhausting. And yeah.
Yeah. Why is it important for you that you're seeing this? What can you do with this information?
Well, rather than look at things as success or failures, if I could just apply other areas of my life into my work where I seem to understand that, you know, sometimes my weight will be up, sometimes it's down, it's okay, nobody's dying. You know, sometimes I'll do something or not. If I could just bring this into my work, I think I'd feel so happy. But growing up, it was all about work. It was all about titles. It was all about success. It was all about accolades and doing things by a certain age. And I seem to have rejected it physically, but mentally just assimilated that belief and walking in it.
Yeah.
It's depressing.
Yeah, but now you get to poke holes in it. Because you're seeing it. Good. Nicely done. Thank you. Sharon.
Yeah, this is really, I mean, I've loved everything about the program, but I think this is really the module that I've been waiting for, because I have often felt like I understood the concept of open-ended questions from a coaching program I took years ago, but coaching hasn't really been my frontline skill that I've used.
Yeah.
And I can really see that it's when people speak from the place of stuck, no choice, that it's easier for me to go into consulting, hoping I'm going to give them something that they're going to grab onto, rather than actually ask the open-ended questions about choice.
Yeah.
Just feels really powerful, because the place that I'm trying to help them get away from is the feeling of I don't have a choice, or it's kind of hopeless, or this is just the way it is.
Yeah. Yeah. So beautifully said.
And you can't change somebody's mindset.
No, not by telling them. Not by telling them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like something really important just clicked for you. I can feel it.
Yeah. It's good. Cause like I said, I understood the concept of open-ended questions, but just the concept of pointing people towards where does choice show up for you as even a concept?
Yeah. It is actually, I think, one of the most empowering concepts we can support our clients in integrating, you know, as it relates to their goals that they've come to us for, but just in life, how different life would be if we walked this philosophy more.
Right. Well, and even, you know, I think you asked a little bit before, like, where does it show up for people? And I just wrote my newsletter about that this morning, because I realized I was not making a choice about some of the thoughts that I was having based on a, you know, just a little interaction with a friend that I was like, she thinks I don't know that. Or does she think I'm just not thinking about things and I just went and got vaccinated and I don't know that it's not 100%. Like, I know all that stuff and I made that choice, but something in the way she said it, like, well, you know, you could still get sick. I'm like, yeah, I know. But I kept having, it's like,
yeah,
that little bit of the whole nice conversation kept coming back until I realized I have a choice to, you know, shift gears when that conversation comes back, that little bit comes back up. Like, I don't have to just keep, you know, replaying the tape. So choice is up for me this week. So thank you.
Yeah, it probably helping make all the connections.
Yeah.
Thank you. Maya, I see that your hand is raised. I'm going to swing back to you in a little bit. I want to get a little bit further and then we'll come back. All right. Another concept for us to just think about when it comes to breakthrough questions in the right situations, to be willing to be lovingly bold. We spoke about this a bit in our creating awareness module as well. We want to do this with questions as well. So sometimes we get scared. We already looked at that. We get scared. Somebody's going to be angry. They think we pushed it too hard. We're going to offend them, you know, whatever it is. And then we ask the easier question, be willing to be lovingly bold. So here's an example. Let's say you've got a client that shares with you that they're working all the time, they're upset that they never have enough time for themselves, that they never have enough time for their family, it's just work all the time. So a very good question, one that's not bold, but one that's a very good question is, well, what can you do differently? Or what would help you make more time for yourself or your family? Right? That's a standard coaching question. But notice the difference between that and then a breakthrough and bold question. What if you asked, when did you start making work your top priority? Or why do you sense that you're so addicted to work? So we don't always want to ask the bold question. There are some conditions that help a bold question land really well, similar to what we looked at in creating awareness. So first of all, solid container with the client, trust. If a client is already triggered, they've come into the session triggered, you know, they're a little wobbly or by something that you've said earlier, may not be the right time for a bold question. You need to have your own energetics as a practitioner in place, right? So no fear. And again, everything I say, no myth of perfection. It's okay to have a little fear if you're going to ask a bold question, right? But if it's so much that the delivery is going to be off or you're not going to be able to handle what happens next, then not the right condition. And of course, the love part is very important. Not just bold question, but lovingly bold, delivered with love and non-judgment. Sometimes practitioners can get scared to ask a bold question because it will create tension. I think that sometimes tension is a component of a good session. It's okay for a client to be slightly triggered by a question. Again, if that solid container is there. It's okay if the client gets stumped on what you ask for a moment, or even more than a moment. It's okay if they don't have the answers right away. You want your questions to challenge your client and to stretch them and to challenge their assumptions. So all of that is also to say, sometimes you'll ask a question and there'll be silence on the other end. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. So every now and again, wait, nothing's ever bad, right? Every now and again, it can mean that the client is super triggered or pissed or, you know, whatever, and you'll deal with that. You'll work with that. You'll navigate that. But most of the time, some silence on the other end is actual deep processing. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about language and foundational principles for questions when it comes to language. So, and this is a place where I'm always working because I am very wordy. But the usually the best questions are succinct. They're clear and direct. Sometimes you can play a game, like when you're doing some practice and you're looking at some questions you've asked afterwards, you can do a game and play like, can I ask that question in less words, right? Just to kind of practice that a little bit. Also, try not to stack questions. Every now and again, you know, I'll do this, but I really try not to ask one question at a time. Use your client's terminology and mix it with moments of new terminology to create awareness. So we want to pay attention to the language, the terminology that our clients use. And we want to use that when we're formulating questions or when we're creating awareness, even if it's not in question form. So, you know, for example, if your client is married and they refer to their partner as their partner versus their husband or their wife or whatever, their life partner, their lover, you know, whatever it is, you want to take note. That's part of your listening skills. You want to take note of that language, and you may want to use that in your questions. When a client hears their language being mirrored back to them, they feel heard and they feel that you're curious and interested in them and in their world. Part of their language, using their language or their terminology, isn't just the actual words that they use, but using, how do I want to say it, kind of like their filters or their what's important to them. So for example, if you know that your client loves yoga or is a yoga teacher or practices yoga, you might be talking about a situation where like everything is turned on its head, and you might ask a question that uses a handstand metaphor. Or if you know that your client has given birth to a child, they talk about their children or they happen to talk about their birth or whatever, you might use some kind of birthing metaphor in a question, even if you're talking about their business. If you know that there are certain books that a client likes, or movies or TV shows, celebrities, that's language that you may want to use. You know, what would such and such do, right, from a book or a movie? If you know that another, there's so many examples to give here. You know, if you know, sometimes I'll work with clients that are entrepreneurs, but they come from a corporate background, right? So I'll use corporate language. You know, what would be the equivalent of team building here? You know, whatever it is. So we want to use clients' terminology, but we also want to bring some new terminology into our questions. And any ways that we're creating awareness, new, bringing in new terminology is a way of creating awareness. So for example, let's say you've got a client that's talking about a certain situation in their life, and they haven't used the term catastrophic thinking, but you use that in a question, right? It opens up a new awareness. Or they're talking about a way that they've really changed, and they haven't quite said it, you know, and you may ask a question about the metamorphosis that's happening, right? That's like a new terminology that may have meaning to them. I always like to ask myself kind of, you know, I do it sort of quick, but, what concept would be helpful next for this client? What concept would be helpful next for this client? And then I may weave that in to a question. Which, by the way, is just also a plug for our continual learning as practitioners. I love to expand my own vocabulary and just learn new words, new concepts, and then bring them into client conversations. Think about your word choices. Oh, Linda's asking if I can give an example of a concept. Yeah, so metamorphosis would be a concept. Catastrophic thinking would be a concept. Calcification would be a concept. You know, any of those things. Okay, think about your word choices. So, and then this is where we get into the subtleties of things, and don't let what I'm about to say overwhelm you. This is why we're practicing. We're going to be practicing our questioning skills. But sometimes just one word can make a big difference in a question. So think about some of the differences here. What would feel empowering for you versus what would feel pleasurable for you? Or how do you know who your friends are versus how do you know who your trusted friends are? Not that one question is better than the other, right? It's just when you're going to use which. Or think about this. This is actually very subtle. What can you do to move forward? What will you do to move forward? I'll ask, what can you do when a client is like almost there, but they haven't really made the decision to take the action, right? But when I know that the client is like on the finish line or about to step over or has stepped over, then I'll say, what will you do to move forward? So of course, this also goes back to coaching the what based on the who. For one client situation, and let's say there's a tense situation, you might ask the client, how would you like to resolve this? But that same situation that another client, you know, brings forward for that client, you might ask, what would be an integrity here? Or how can you set aligned boundaries for yourself here? So how do we pick words? Well, first of all, by listening, right? Just want to do that deep listening. We want to be really aware of and conscious of our clients' goals, our clients' priorities. But maybe even more, well, this goes along with priorities, even more so than goals. The more that we are aware of our clients' values and needs, the more we're going to be able to meet them with the right words for questions, concepts for questions, and ask really good questions. So I'll give an example here. If I know that one of my clients' top values is freedom, right? They may not have ever mentioned it in this particular session, but I know it from my welcome questionnaire, or, you know, because I've gotten to know them over a course of sessions. If I know that one of their top values is freedom, if they're talking about a new venture, a new project, or a new idea, I might ask a question about freedom there, right? Like, will this allow you your freedom, or how can you set this up to create the most freedom for yourself? But if I know, for example, that a client's top need is money, you know, income generation, I'm going to ask a very different question about that situation. Or if I know that their top value is integrity in their work, right? So the more that I'm underscoring this because I have just found it to be so important. The more that we can continue to circle back to our clients' values, their needs, particularly their values, the better questions we're going to ask, the more meaningful questions we're going to ask. Okay. You want to think about your tone, which is the pitch or the quality of your voice. When you ask a question, tone can make a difference in how a question lands. Again, one tone is not better than another tone, but you want to be intentional about it. You want to think about your pacing, which is how fast or slow you speak. You have a really great question, but ask it too fast, it's not going to land in the same way. Sometimes I'll ask a particular question and I'll get a little quiet and I'll slow down the words a little bit, kind of like how I'm doing right now, right? And it creates the environment for the question to be received in. So I like to think about that. Think about volume, how loud or soft, rhythm, the flow and the melody of the words. So it's not just about the words, but it's the delivery of the words. Sharon brought up before this idea of open-ended questions. So I have found, and it's so easy to fall into yes or no questions. But I too, I'm going to say, try to ask open-ended questions. Not always though. So there are particular times and places where a yes, no question is exactly what's going to create the breakthrough or exactly what's required. And the best way that I can describe is in a moment where a client is ready to make an internal or external decision. When you know a client is right there, ready to make so what does an internal or external decision mean? Like they're ready to set a boundary, or they're ready to go for something, or they're like right there ready to let go of a habit. Internal or external decision, asking a question where they say their yes, or they say their no, or whatever the word is, that's what's most powerful versus an open-ended where there's going to be a lot of answer to it. Does that make sense? Okay. So I do use yes or no questions, or either or, you know, but in very intentionally, very particular moments. you want to look to make sure that your questions aren't leading questions. They're not leading. So an example of a leading question is, let's say a client says, I wish I wouldn't always miss deadlines at work. So a leading question would be, do you think, and here's a yes or no, that isn't a good one. Do you think it's because you procrastinate, right? You're leading. Here's an example of a non-leading question in that situation. Why do you think you're missing your deadlines? See the difference there? Similarly, don't ask questions that make assumptions. So let's say a client says, this was a bad week with my partner. I said all the wrong things again. An assumption might be, well, that seems to happen with you a lot. You know, what's going on there? And it may come to that, right? After you ask some other questions, but kind of a non-assumption response is, well, tell me more about what happened, right? Because that's just, saying this was a bad week, I said all the wrong things, you're assuming that that's true, right? But that may not be true. There may be other ways for the client to see that situation. But if you just jump to, that happens a lot, what's going on? Why are you doing, why do you think you said all the wrong things again? Right. Here's another example. Client says, I want to take my business much bigger. I really want my business to be much bigger. So an assumption is awesome. And this is less of a question, but anyway, assumption is awesome. I'm so excited. And you're so ready for more clients and for higher rates and for more people. Non-assumption, that sounds really exciting. What does bigger mean to you? So that relates a little bit to filters too, right? Okay. Another principle to think about is for your questions to connect the dots for your client. You want your questions to connect the dots for your client. So I say this when I teach curriculum too, because it's the same with curriculum. Slow things down. Slow down the line of questioning. So because you as the practitioner are who you are, you're super smart, smarty pants, wise person, right? You probably already see things that your client doesn't see yet, but don't jump there. Don't jump to the last question in the line there. They're gonna learn by you asking questions that connect the dots for them to the thing that you may already see. And anyway, as we know, the thing that you may already see may not be the thing anyway, right? The other thing about slowing down in questioning, is know the right moments for exploring inner feelings, motivations, inner limits and obstacles versus when to ask questions about action and moving forward. A common tendency is, a client says they want to receive something from the end of the session, and then practitioners jump into the action questions first. Well, what can you do to make that happen? We'll create it. I've found, and again, this is just my style, but I was offering it for you to think about. I found more often than not, what will lead to the most powerful, ultimate brainstorm of actions and commitment to those actions and accountability to those aligned actions is to look first at it, ask some questions around inner pieces too. Why, how will it feel, whatever it is, the context that they've brought forward. So no one is the right moment for exploring an inner feeling or inner motivation limit obstacle versus when to ask question outer questions. I'm going to stop talking in a few minutes. I promise we'll open up for shares and cues. I just want to get through a few more things. So I spoke about connecting the dots, but another foundational principle is make connections. So one of the most powerful jobs, I think, is for us to support our clients to see connections, right? When a connection is made, a breakthrough can happen in that instant. So let me give you some examples of this. Let's say a client is talking, I get this a lot with clients, they're entrepreneurs. A client is talking about seeing lots of social media posts and then they feel really bad about themselves. They're comparing themselves to others, right? Make a connection. So a great question, you know, obviously depending on the situation, but you know, ask, so what other life situation does this remind you of? Help them make it, help them see that it's not just about Facebook or social media or this one right thing. Help them see, and then you'll have a conversation from there about it. Or you know, let's say she tells you this thing about social media, she feels really bad. And you, the practitioner, remember on a previous session that this client was describing her relationship with her sister as competitive, right? So make a connection, ask, how does this connect to your relationship with your sister? Or how does this relate to your competitive relationship with your sister? Support clients in making connections. Let's say a client is overworking and they're you know, miserable because they're just overworking and overworking. And in a previous session, that client mentioned that they sometimes overexercise. Make the connection between the overworking and the overexercising. You know, and this might be like a combo of consulting or creating awareness and asking a question. You might say, you're overworking reminds me of your overexercising. Is there a connection there? What might the connection be? All right. Two more things. Four levels of learning and processing, learning and transformation. So I think I've shared, I feel like I'm always talking about the four levels. So I won't go too much into it right now. But the four levels, just to say there's a mental learning of level of learning and processing. There's a heart or emotional level of learning and processing. There's a spirit level of learning and processing, connecting to something that's greater than us. Doesn't have to be spirit, can be our inner wisdom, our great grandma, Betty, you know, whatever it is. And then a body level of learning and processing or transformation. Try to vary, and one question can hit more than one of the levels. They don't always fit so neatly into boxes, but just be conscious that you're activating not just the mind level, because in order for somebody to transform, you want to hit at least two of the levels. We can't just think our way into new things. Maybe we need to think and make a body memory of it or understand how we're feeling, and right? So just be conscious of that. Okay. And if you guys want like more of a discussion on the four levels, I feel like I'm always talking about it, but if you want more of a discussion, let me know. I'll do maybe a live on it or bring it into one of our calls. Yes, I see people nodding their heads. Okay. All right. Last thing for now, last foundational principle. Know when something is meant to remain in the mystery for the time being. don't be an absolute clarity chaser. That's like having a God complex, right? We're not always all solving. Sometimes we just can't have the clarity. Don't get stuck there. Don't get stuck there. Okay, I know that I've shared a lot, and I want to hear what's coming through. What are some of your questions? Some questions here. Yeah, the four levels. Thank you, Linda, and to everybody that answered. So again, the four levels are the mental, how we think, right? In order for change to happen, we need to think new, you know, be aware, create awareness, mental awareness, think new things, know what's there. How do we feel? Like what is the feeling? Asking questions around feeling is important. Spirit, connecting to something greater than ourselves. And then body, which is similar to emotion, but not exactly, you know, feeling it in our bodies, the new feeling or the old feeling. All right, I've got homework for you, but I'll pause on that for a moment. I know we looked at a lot today. I'd love to hear what's coming forward. What are you seeing? And what questions do you have? What are you taking from our call today? What feels important? Or what questions do you have? Or what do you want to add to the conversation? Kelsey.
Naomi and I were talking about this earlier this week, that was yesterday. but when it just came to mind again, when we were talking about the good versus the bold questions, and you use the example of when did you start making work your top priority? And we were doing the homework of, like, what are you hearing? What are you not hearing? And if we didn't hear them say work was a top priority, I'm really trying to remove my filters and assumptions and biases. So how do you know when to go there through them sharing versus not?
Right. Yeah, it's such a great question. So first of all, it's like where you're starting from is great because you're aware of your filters, right? We want to be aware of the filters because we could be wrong. Like we could ask a question like that. When did you make work your top priority? And the person can be like, no, it's not my top priority. And right. And then you'd be like, yeah, that's my filter. Right. But that's okay if that happens. Right. So that's number one. But just the fact that you're checking your filters is going to is kind of one check mark that will help you not, you know, it's not going to be fail proof, but it's going to help you a lot. And then if anybody wants to help me here, how do you know if it's a filter or not? It's okay if it's a filter, so long as it's checked, right? So does that make sense what I'm saying? Let me know if not.
I think so. And I do like, I guess if it's a question, if it is a filter, you can always add that to the question of this might be a filter of mine.
Exactly. And I do that 100%, like a good amount of the time. When I'm not sure, right? So you can add that 100%. The other thing to know is that you may have checked your filter and you might ask the question and the client might disagree, but it's just because they're in resistance. Like, no, right? So it's not to make things more complicated, right? So it's there's so many different pieces to it. But yeah, I think what's important is to check it. So Lisa's asking, can I give my definition of checking? So it's just being aware, Lisa, right? Being aware that that's my filter. I'll tell you guys, I have a really good story about filters. I'll save it once we hit 4:30 just to see what questions there are and give homework. And then whoever wants to stick around for it, I'll share. I think it will help. Stephanie.
So the last statement that you shared about knowing when something is meant to remain in the mystery for the time being made me think of some moments that I've had with clients where I've asked a question and I can see, you know, them pausing and really thinking. And the vibe that I'm getting is that they're searching for what they think is the right answer to give or what they think I want to hear. And I'm checking in with you all to say, like, my tendency is to say, you might not know the answer right now, which is absolutely okay. And that some of the deepest awarenesses happen in between sessions. And it's kind of that trick, or it's tricky to know, like, how patient to be in that moment while they're kind of digging in and searching versus giving them space to really be with that question and allow it to come when it's meant to come. Does that make sense?
100%. I'm so glad you're bringing it forward. It's an art. And I'm so glad you're bringing the topic up, and you can tell me if you agree with this, Stephanie, but I think part of it is energy follows energy. So, right, the more comfortable that we as practitioners are with not needing immediate clarity, with being in the mystery. We'll do a whole call on the mystery later on in the program, but like the more comfortable we are with that, then we're creating this environment and this container and this energy that allows a client to not always know and to know that that's valuable to not always know.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I hadn't thought about it that way from the energetics perspective. But that feels like such a, I don't know, if there like feels like it's full of compassionate space for the client to be able to honor their own process of however long it takes.
Yeah. Yes. 100%. It's like we want to hold the structure for them to learn and find out and also honor the process
for them. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vesica is asking, how do we know if they're in resistance? I'm going to give you a non-answer, Vesica, and I'm sorry, but it's going to take me a whole session to teach it, and we're getting there soon. But there's a lot to we'll look fully at resistance and resistance archetypes in the not too far future. That's what I'll say for now. Any other last thoughts? Well, let me give you your homework. So we're at time. Okay, so with your clients this week, if you're working with clients, after your client sessions, I want to invite you, you've got an assessment form, which is the same assessment questions that we've added, what I was mentioning in the beginning, to the tracking forms in the member center. But after each client session, take some time to answer those questions. What went really well? What could I have done differently? Or what questions would I have asked differently? What is my inner wisdom telling me about this client or about what they need next? Doing that for a little bit can really help build questioning muscle, just build all the muscles. The other thing I want to invite you to do is in your client sessions, if you can tolerate it, because I know it might be a little bit scary, slow down. If you have a tendency to speed up, I want to invite you to slow down just a little bit in your client sessions and take a moment to craft your question. And it's perfectly acceptable to say, hold on a second, I'm thinking of the way that I want to ask this question. See if you can tolerate that. right? Not looking like you know all the answers right away or the question, right? And see if you can take a little time with that. A piece of homework that you'll get a bunch of things in the member center, but just one thing that I want to highlight is this is one of my favorite practices for building. I have a lot of favorite practices for building questioning skills, but one of the things that I'll ask you to do is for you to just write out a short paragraph or two about a current dilemma or situation in your life. Just write it out. It doesn't have to take a long time. And then read over what you wrote and then be the coach or the practitioner. Articulate 3 to 5 different journaling questions for yourself based on what you wrote. And then bonus points if you want to answer those journaling questions for yourself. And if you're working with a partner in this program, similar to what I said with clients, so I want you to take time, think about questions, slow down in the session. And then when you have the discussion, the breakdown afterwards, look specifically at what questions worked, which ones would you like to do differently, what could be asked differently. They think about questions. Okay, so it's 4:34. Of course, if you have to go, go. I feel like there still may be a question or two or comment that wants to be made. So I'd love to hear. And I will, I'm going to do a Facebook Live this week on the filter situation because it's going to take a while and I want to do it right. There's lots of different learnings to pull from it. So I promise I will do that. But anything else that wants to be said, spoken, asked before we wrap for today? All right, then I am sending you all off with a big hug and wishes for amazing questions this week. Talk to you soon, or tomorrow, hopefully, some of you. Bye.